This is a continuation, as you know, of a discussion on the New Lutheran Church, and I think I'll just start calling it the ELCA at this point, since we've heard it often enough. It seems as though the problems with the name, you may have heard about some of the difficulty. There are two or three congregations in Wisconsin or Minnesota, I forget which, who own the name of the church, or have that name. They don't own it. Copyright a name? But I think last I heard there's going to be an arrangement worked out so that that's not a problem, so that it will be called, unless it changes in the next couple of months, the ELCA. Anyway, the topic for our discussion this afternoon is on the ecumenical stance of the ELCA. And someone at lunch was making a joke about saying, well, the ecumenical stance will be to stand on one leg or something. I don't know what they were saying, but I'd like to share. It shouldn't take us a great deal of time, but I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts about this. What the ELCA has proposed is a statement within the statement of purpose that says that the new church shall relate to Lutheran churches and other Christian churches for the sake of mission and the oneness of Christ's church, acknowledging as one with this church in faith and doctrine all churches that likewise accept the teachings of the unaltered Augsburg Confession, relate to other faith communities for dialogue and common action, and relate to independent movements and coalitions. Now, I think correctly so, and this is again where I will offer an editorial comment, I think correctly so the LCA bishops and church council felt that this was not the strongest possible statement that could be made about ecumenical relations. And so what they are urging, what will probably be adopted, is an amendment to this statement, a change of it, which will be a stronger and more clearly worded statement on ecumenical relationships. They're calling for a statement something like this, except to say that the new church, will be one in faith and doctrine with all churches that accept the teaching of the unaltered Augsburg Confession, that the new church will strive for the unification of all Lutherans within its boundaries for one church. And that's an important statement. In other words, to say that that the ELCA recognizes that there's still one or two other major Lutheran bodies in the United States. And so there'll be a commitment to strive for the unification of all Lutherans, and that there'll be a commitment to foster Christian unity by participating in ecumenical Christian activities and to dialogue with other faith communities. So as I'm saying, I think what will happen is that this statement that we now have in the proposed Constitution will be amended to make a stronger commitment, first of all, to declare that all churches that accept the unaltered Augsburg Confession, that we are one in faith and in doctrine with them. And that means that as far as the ELCA will be concerned, we are one with Lutheran churches throughout the world that accept the unaltered Augsburg Confession. And that's an important statement because there are most Lutheran churches now in the world belong to the Lutheran World Federation, but all do not. And for those who do not and yet who still have the same doctrinal basis, we'll be saying to them, we are one with you. And secondly, I think it's, as I said before, a statement about to strive for the unification of Lutherans in this country, that we still will be open to the other church bodies, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Wisconsin Synod, that we might be one at some point in the future, and to participate wherever possible in ecumenical Christian activities. Is there a comment about this statement? I'd like to look more at what we're doing now, but is there a comment about that? Anyone have, or a question? About what the intent?
I think your intent is good. It's long overdue that the major Lutheran bodies propose such.
This is an example where one of the church bodies, or perhaps two, but I think one, is providing leadership. And the LCA has had a stronger statement and commitment toward Lutheran unity and ecumenical relationships than either the ALC or AELC. And I think that's healthy, that this is one example where one of the church bodies is leading us in a stronger statement. I thought probably most interesting would be to simply review with you where we are at this point and where we are likely to be with some major traditions in the world. As I think everyone may know, and if you don't, I'll just repeat it, we have been for the past, 2 years? Today two it was.
82.
Yeah, so it's actually been 4 years. We have shared with the Episcopal Church in the U.S. a statement of interim Eucharistic hospitality, which is to say that we may have from time to time services of Holy Communion. I don't know about you, but our congregation has shared in worship services with Episcopalians, and we have shared each other's worship services and so forth. That's been done. As you know, there have been some marvelous Lutheran-Catholic dialogues going on in the U.S. for some time, and these dialogues have become the model for what's called bilaterals, or dialogues between two church bodies around the world. Church bodies around the world look to the American Lutheran-Catholic dialogues as being the best example of what can happen between traditions. Yes? Well, you're waving. Hi. I thought you were just waving at me or something.
Sorry.
So this will continue, and I think other examples you may have experienced them too, but last year in Chicago to celebrate the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther's birth, actually that was 2 years ago, we had a grand service at the Roman Catholic Cathedral, and the Cardinal was one of the presiding ministers along with the Lutheran bishops, and Martin Marty was the preacher, and you have to have tickets to get in. It was by ticket only because they simply couldn't accommodate all the people that wanted to participate. What is new?
Let me just say,
yes,
something on that Roman Catholic Church. You said it's going so well. One of the reasons why it is that they've been concentrating on where the Lutherans and the Catholics agree on things rather than where they differ. And they are working on those subjects, and that's where a lot of progress has been made.
Though they have made the decision to tackle some pretty controversial issues, the role of Mary, papal authority.
But in the past, it's
right,
the way
right.
It's in.
Yeah.
That's the Catholics have agreed to our, not works, but
justification by grace through faith. Yeah.
Faith.
Yeah, they started off with a creed, the Nicene Creed, and baptism, surprising agreement on the Eucharist. I think that many of us feel that there really is no significant reason why we could not, at this point, be sharing our communion tables. But there is more than that involved as far as the Roman Catholics are concerned. But I expect and hope to see that in my lifetime, that Eucharistic sharing. It goes on informally.
It goes on in certain places now. Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you a story about that. I wasn't going to, but now I will just tell stories. As you all know, Lutheran Catholic weddings go on all the time, and for many years now, or several years, I've had priests come in and share in a service in our church, or I've gone to a Catholic church to share with them, and it's happened several times in a Catholic church where it will be a nuptial mass, and it's always a kind of an awkward thing because officially, I'm supposed to be kind of invisible at that point. I can be there as a, I'm not a layperson, and I'm not a priest, so I'm kind of in another world. But it's interesting to me how different priests have invited me to stand at the altar, join the prayers, distribute the sacrament, and so forth. But the most remarkable thing that I've experienced is recently, or last year, there was a wedding in our church, and it was one of our young men marrying a Lutheran young woman, and her family was from the East Coast, so they had asked if we could simply arrange to have a priest take part in the service. So one of my closest friends, who I will not name since this is being recorded, who is a Roman Catholic Monsignor, and I invited him to assist, and he and I have participated in dialogues before, and he is a very faithful churchman. He is very faithful in terms of the church's teachings, and he and I, in fact, did a dialogue one year in an ecumenical service in which we described the pain that we each felt in not being able to share the sacrament together. And I told him it was a Eucharist, and I said I'd like for him to simply stand at the altar with me and distribute. And that was the understanding, and that was very clear. And as I finished the Eucharistic prayer, I was communing myself prior to communing the couple and the rest of the congregation. And I, just as I had finished taking the bread, I turned, and he looked at me, he was looking right in my eyes, and he just put his hands out to receive the sacrament, and then the cup. And then we communed, the service continued until it was finished, and of course we couldn't talk because this was all, there were things going on. So I got back into the sacristy, into my office, and I was waiting for him to come back, and he walked in the door, and we just looked at each other and hugged each other, and he said, "Craig, it was the existential moment." He said, "If I would have not communed, it would have been a sin." It was the first time ever that he had communed outside of the Roman Catholic Church. So I think the Spirit sometimes moves in spite of church structures, certainly, and those kind of things will continue. But I believe that the direction that is happening in our country, in the U.S. at least, is for closer and closer Lutheran Roman Catholic relations. And in fact, there's an interesting, the international Lutheran Catholic dialogues have recommended some rather remarkable things, beginning with the Roman Church and the Lutheran Church in a given area, a synod, beginning to work together in terms of a common roster of ministers, with a view that at some point in the future, each would be able to recognize the ministers of each other, so that, in other words, a Lutheran could minister to Roman Catholics in various settings and vice versa. And I don't know all the details. I wish I would have brought that with me, but there's a way of doing things right now. A synod and a diocese can reach certain agreements as far as joint ministry that does not violate canon law. And those are the kind of things that are being suggested, rather than waiting for canon law to change, which moves very, very slowly to try and do what's legal now. I think that will happen more.
What type of ministry?
The ordained ministries.
What type of thing?
Well, right now, officially nothing or very little. But this would be, for example, that in terms of sacramental ministries, you know, weddings, visitation of the sick, anointing of the sick, and
that's
so forth.
That's going on right now?
No, they're recommending that kind of thing could happen. Yes?
As an example, Craig, if I may, of how this is moving to fruition in some areas. For the second year in a row in the San Francisco Bay Area, we held our Reformation service last October in St. Francis de Sales Cathedral, Catholic Cathedral in Oakland. And the other thing, if I may take the time to tell it, it surprises many Lutherans when I mention it, was that when Vatican Council occurred and they changed the Mass to what we now call the P purified man. We have taken a trip up into the Sierras near Yosemite in the wintertime, and on New Year's Eve, our son's girlfriend at the time said, "Well, look, I've got to go to Mass sometime this evening," so we would take her over. The Lutheran church didn't have a service at the time. We took her over to this little log chapel, and just as the Mass was about to start, all the power went off. And they had distributed these cards of the new Mass that had just been changed. The only responses from the laity at the Mass were from this Lutheran family who knew it as our Mass, as our service. And when the lights finally came on, the priest says, "Well, at least some member of the flock have been reading up on the And as we prayed it out, we said, "We certainly enjoyed this immensely. We're members of our Savior's Lutheran Church." In Lafayette. So I think if those haven't done it already, they should slip in sometime to a Catholic chapel and be right at home at hearing the Mass set as we hear the Eucharist Sunday evenings here before we go.
I think the Lutheran Book of Worship recovered a lot of that, of the fullness of the service that our separate books didn't have before. At the 82 AELC convention in Cleveland, we had our service at the Roman Catholic Cathedral in Cleveland, and the bishop who was there did not take part in, well, yes, he did take part in the service. I think he did some reading or something. But at the end of the service, Elmer, were you there at that convention? Do you recall when he made his comment? He says that he really enjoyed the service because he had never heard such singing. He wished that that his people would be able to sing, and of course, you know, we Lutherans kind of belt it out and we sing, and the church was rocking with music. Yes.
Another comment. What you said about is in between the three pastors and the congregation, it's a viable thing.
Yeah, that's good. That's going outside the rules, that's for sure.
That sure is. And in charismatic circles, it's the same thing. Priests, Lutheran pastors, Episcopal, all are sharing the same Eucharist.
Also on college campuses.
A lot of places.
They actually had a Martin Luther Festival at the Catholic Center, and then we had a Saints Festival at the Lutheran Center. It was kind of a tone. In addition to the story that the gentleman just read,
George.
When the Lutherans were struggling with the new red hymnal, that was just after I became Lutheran and had been at Episcopalian as a child, and the new red hymnal that they had, that they were struggling with, they practically copied the Episcopal liturgy. And so it was an advantage, and they were struggling with that. And I already knew it was practically word for word. And they were also, at that time, just starting to get used to the white cassocks and the new garb that they had exchanged for the old academic-looking black robe. And that, of course, had been Episcopalian for years already, so that was kind of fun to come into the Lutheran church at that point.
I have a Presbyterian colleague who refers to my alb and stole as feathers. He says, "You Lutherans have lots of feathers, feathers of different colors." He's still into black, basic black, but mm-hmm. He's moving slowly. Elmer?
In the campus ministry.
In my congregation last year, We covenanted with a Roman Catholic parish to do a summer-long, I think it was last summer, a summer-long discussion on justification. And there was one stipulation that they had after the group was formed of, it was a pretty good-sized group of Catholic and Lutheran laity, and that was that the priest and I could not take part. We were cordially disinvited from the group. Which we had anticipated, we weren't shocked about that. We thought it was kind of, and then we were invited back at the end of the summer to be informed about what had happened. And I felt very smug, of course, because the Roman Catholics were announcing to their pastor that they had discovered what a wonderful thing this justification thing is. And of course, they believed that all along anyway. They said that we've always believed that. And they didn't know that was a uniquely Lutheran sort of a thing. And it was, and they were informing their pastor that, as Elmer just said, that of course the next step should be that we should be able to have shared Eucharist. And the pastor, you know, painfully said, well, if you want to do that, you'll have to do it on your own. You know, we can't do that officially. So we had groups of lay people who visited each other's churches and communed, and that was a good expression. I had an experience, too. I'm telling stories that I was invited to a parish's anniversary service, and there were two Lutheran, the only two non-Catholic clergy that were there were two of us Lutherans, and they had the sisters of the parish had made up special stoles for the occasion. They were very, very lovely, and we were all to be wearing vested in albs, and there were silver stoles because it was the parish's 25th anniversary, and we were getting our marching orders when and the Monsignor had given us one set and then had made it not made clear where we were supposed to be during the Mass. And one of the assistants, the priest, came over and said, well, you're going to just follow me. And I said to him, I said, now, don't lead us into something we'll be sorry for. He said, no, just follow me, trust me. So it came time after the greeting of peace, for the concelebrated Mass. And he said, come on, follow me. And I said, now, be careful now. He said, no, come on. So he marches us up there, and there are these, I don't know, 12 or 14 priests and two Lutheran pastors. And we're up there saying the verba together. And the way they did it was that each priest communed himself in turn. And I was, by accident, was the last one and had to then commune the bishop who was waiting to. And I said, this poor man is going to just croak right in his robe. But he just smiled, and that was, we went ahead and did the service. So I don't know what happened. Nothing, we weren't struck down. So I guess it was legitimate. Anything more on Roman Catholic or Episcopal before we get to the next group? This is the one I'm kind of interested in your reaction, but this is the newest. We're all familiar with the two we've talked about, but what is new is that at the three conventions of the churches this summer, there will be a proposal, a recommendation concerning relationship with the Reformed Church of America and the Presbyterian Church USA. And the recommendation is going to be somewhat different at the three church bodies. As far as I know, I haven't heard precisely what the ALC is going to do, though my understanding is that the ALC will have the same recommendation that the AELC will have. And that is this, that we recognize one another as churches in which the gospel is proclaimed and the sacraments administered according to the ordinance of Christ, that we recognize as both valid and effective one another's ordained ministries, and that we recognize one of the celebrations of the Lord's Supper as the means of grace in which Christ, truly present in the sacraments, is given and received. And so the recommendation is that if we enter into this relationship, that we will pray with each other, provide for common study of the scriptures, our histories and traditions, provide for occasional joint services of the Lord's Supper, where appropriate and desirable, provide for the sharing of pastors between our two traditions, where appropriate and desirable, and to, this is interesting, to designate at least one congregation in each regional judicatory from each tradition, which will be linked together in a common ministry, common worship, common mission planning, and the like. Now, the LCA, I understand, is going to recommend all of this except for the pulpit and altar fellowship part of it.
You mean in relation to the
To the Reformed and Presbyterian churches. It is likely, my understanding is that it is likely that the AELC and the ALC will vote positively for this recommendation.
You did, at least the Illinois district did.
Okay.
In April.
Okay, and I haven't heard what the church council recommended after the district conventions. Has anyone heard that?
They favored.
The whole package?
The whole package.
Okay. The LCA church council has recommended the whole package minus pulpit and altar fellowship. But this will be a very significant new step because we have, you know, can characterize it generally, we have been, in effect, more closely leaning toward the more Catholic tradition found in both the Roman and Episcopal churches, but now we are reaching out to the more Protestant churches in recommending this.
Gail, the rationale for the LCA not recommending, is it liturgical reasons or?
Can anyone else answer that? I can respond.
Well, I would only say as a lay person, without nitpicking, if the true body and blood of Christ are present in the Eucharist, I cannot understand how these other churches would be included. It's nice to have Thanksgiving services together and all that sort of thing, but how can you go to a Presbyterian or other church and be involved in altar fellowship when it is not the same communion as we're accustomed to?
Would you want to say how you understand that?
Well, as I've understood it from confirmation, this is the true body and blood of Christ. I go to the Presbyterian church occasionally with our grandchildren and we'll share in this passing of the cup down the aisles and do that sort of thing, knowing that it's not the true body and blood of Christ. The words of institution aren't there. It's not intended as the same. The pastor cannot say, as most of ours do, truly believing that this is the body and blood of Christ, we welcome you to participate in sacrament of the altar. Now, I may be wrong, but that's how I personally feel.
They just have a memorial service?
Just a memorial. And in remembrance of him. And they sing this beautiful hymn in remembrance of him. But it is not in any way to be perceived as being the body and blood of Christ. And how can you go along with us saying the body of Christ, the blood of Christ, when this other is merely a symbol?
Well, let me respond by saying that the Reformed Church and the Presbyterian Church will be adopting this exact same wording. And the wording is, and I'll say it again, this is what they're saying they believe. Recognize one of the celebrations of the Lord's Supper as the means of grace in which Christ, truly present in the sacraments, is given and received. Forgiveness of sins is declared and experienced, and the foretaste of eternal life is granted.
You mean then that sometime they're going to have a convention that states it, because they will not state it as of today?
If this agreement is adopted by the churches, they will have to make that statement. I mean, the pulpit and altar fellowship is based upon this statement, and the fellowship wouldn't exist without the Presbyterian and Reformed churches making this statement.
So then, if they make that statement,
mm-hmm.
and I have serious question that they will or can, if there are any old line Presbyterians involved, if they make the statement, then we would alter the pulpit.
It would only be, the fellowship would only occur if the churches agree on the same statement. And let me say, this recommendation comes out of the Lutheran Reformed dialogues, in which and I'm not as familiar with them as I am with the Lutheran Catholic dialogues, mm-hmm. but as I understand it, the participants in those dialogues urged this recommendation even 2 years ago on the basis that they believed that that we do have a common understanding of the Eucharist, of the Lord's Supper, remember Christ, but
there apparently has been some theological movement in those traditions that says this is what we believe and teach. Now, that may not be the case for every congregation or minister.
He opened that was a watch me open to this only because one of the members of that joint committee is Walt Fulman, who's a very frequent speaker here, our program coordinator, and he is such a dying the wool systematician of the Lutheran tradition.
Yes.
And if people are in on that, something that happened because he's a pretty stubborn guy in the process. And he's very excited about these people.
And he's from what tradition?
The Missouri Synod, background now ALC. He teaches at Trinity Seminary in Columbus, Ohio.
Walt has a very high understanding of the Eucharist. I mean, he would not be a person who would say, well, let's just do it for the sake of being nice to our... Yeah.
Well, look, I'm not a theologian.
No.
I only know some
small
confirmed youngster back in Missouri, from the Missouri tradition, incidentally, but not now. But these
we'll excuse that, George. It's okay.
But you would know more about it, and if they come around to accepting that, I have no problem.
Gloria? And
question,
Kristen?
Will they turn themselves as a confessing church then? What about that part of it?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Because I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. I think I probably am in the position that Elmer is that I'm taking the recommendation of the participants very seriously, and frankly, I think this is a good illustration. I think we know less about our brothers and sisters in the Reformed tradition than we do in the Roman tradition, just because of the last, 10 years or so. And in answer to your original question, I think that lack of familiarity or less familiarity is why the LCA is holding back their recommendation of this. Oh, it's fun to be.
Or at least the ones who always say they are.
Yeah. We know they are the biggest. We'll agree on that.
I have a good reason. They're not
Kristen?
Usually the obstinate one.
There's a book out there. Been out for several years, it probably is out of print in fact, called Marburg Revisited, that talks about, I mean, that was an eye-opener to me because it said just that we have misjudged each other, as has been the case in other examples in the church's history, that we have not understood correctly the Reformed understanding of the sacrament. And I'm sure that that book was a part of those dialogues. I can see, I mean, just practically speaking, our neighboring Presbyterian church has what I would characterize as a very low understanding of the sacrament. I mean, they have the Lord's Supper 4 times a year, whether they need it or not, and that kind of thing I see to be more of an obstacle. They may have the correct understanding, but it's less important in their life. Perhaps this is the situation where our understanding and appreciation for that may be a gift that we give to them, just as we'll no doubt receive gifts from them in return. But I suspect that at least 2 of the 3 church bodies will adopt this practice, adopt this resolution this summer, which means that in effect the new church will have that almost certainly. And it seems to me that if we follow the model that we did with the Episcopal Church, that before we have these joint services of the Eucharist, that what will be necessary will be to have that prayer and common study that's also recommended. We sometimes, tend to skip over that and say, well, let's just celebrate. But I think before that, I look forward, in fact, to sitting down with the Presbyterian minister and representatives of the congregation and do the kind of study that I hope would lead to a joint celebration.
How related is any of that to the DEM study?
Yes. That nothing in the documentation indicates that, though clearly they've all, that's a, like an under undergirding. We've talked about that yesterday too. As I said yesterday, I think that the BEM document has
the phrase, maybe not everybody, does anybody know that?
The Baptism Eucharist Ministry document from the from Lima, Peru, 1982. Everybody know that document? Are you familiar with it? Some are saying yes, some no. Let me just tell you then. In 1982, as the result of a great many years of study and preparation, 100 theologians met in Lima, Peru, from a complete spectrum of traditions, from the Orthodox, Roman Catholic, Lutheran, Episcopal segment, all the way to Baptist, Congregationalist, huge spectrum. And at that, thank you. Yes, this is the copy. It's in the bookstore. I should mention that quickly. This is available in the bookstore. And this is the AELC cheap version, inexpensive version. The version published by the World Council is very expensive. This is much less so. Yes, 1982. And these 100 theologians, not speaking on behalf of their churches, but as teachers in the churches, adopted a document called Baptism, Eucharist, and Ministry. And this document is asking the churches to respond to what these teachers in the church believe to be a statement of convergence, that's the word they use, of convergence in our beliefs about baptism, Eucharist, and ministry. And if, or insofar as this document, and it will certainly be modified, I think, through the years, but insofar as this document is adopted, I think it will be the single most important document in the ecumenical movement for a long time. It has the most promise. And to me, it's still, on the section on Eucharist, as a Lutheran, I can absolutely say this is my understanding. I have no problem with it whatsoever. And if this can be said by Methodist Church, then I would be one with them at the altar. If it's the Baptist, I could be one with them. Now, whether it is another matter. But this is a document that has a great deal of promise. And in answer to your question, I don't think it's not mentioned explicitly, but I think it's probably there. Anyone else?
How many years was it? 30 or more?
A long period.
But that was under discussion. It just took ages to get to the point where we were. That in the latter days,
because I think the churches, the Lutherans have said that's a serious deficiency in the document. It's interesting, though, that even on the ministry section, that it states very flatly that there is no, you know, word for priest in the New Testament, that there was no function, I mean, that it wasn't necessary, etc. So it isn't exactly pleasing to the Roman Catholics either, I suspect, in that sense, you know, or the Orthodox, right? Yeah, we took this document, I mentioned this a couple days ago, I'll say it again. I think this is the kind of document that an adult discussion group could benefit from greatly in a congregational setting. I would, if you have not done it in your church, in your congregation, campus ministry or congregation, I would urge you to do it because it's got a lot of good stuff in it, and it will cause you to have some good discussions. The silence is meditation. I think we're done. Any more questions or comments?
Where do you go from there? What are the fantasies about the future? Do you stop there, or do you have no... What kind of contact do we have with the non-sacramental tradition?
What are your thoughts?
I think it's about half of the Reformation was with the Roman Church, the other half was rejection and Anabaptists. We haven't worked on that side of the street very well. And I'm not asking us to do the same thing we're doing there, but the dialogue seems to be involved with the
Church. I think the Lutheran Reform dialogue was a step in that direction. And it's making some people uncomfortable, because there are people, and this may be, need to be said, there are Lutherans...
I don't know. I don't think so. He thinks he could.
And he seems to think that they might find that our new daughter-in-law took communion with us in the Lutheran Church.
She was raised...
She was raised Catholic. She's of the Catholic
faith. And it's okay that they do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, according to his...
The priest differs. Yeah,
and this is the Bay Area. This is Union City, San Francisco, Bay Area.
Yeah.
And we were even invited to take communion with our granddaughter's first communion.
My experience is it works for Lutherans to go to the Catholic Church, but for them to get permission.
They're welcome in the church I'm at.
I know, they're welcome in your Lutheran church, but are they welcome from your end or the other end? Can they get permission from the Catholic Church to do that? A few years ago in our area, that wasn't included. The Lutherans said fine, but their church said absolutely not.
That's still a church rule.
That's what I thought.
No question about that, but I should tell you that the Catholic Church is in the south end of Cook County, where you would get permission where you wouldn't.
There's this underground network. We pass messages at night.
In the San Francisco Bay Area, we had a lovely college of Notre Dame, and the nuns bring their artwork and all up for a Lutheran church, and when they have communion that evening, they all come in very comfortable with the communion. And when we're going on a trip and we can't meet the 8:30 or 11 o'clock, we stop at College of New Dame at 7 in the morning. And one Sunday morning, a nun came back along, my wife and I were sitting. She said, "Would you say this fun story song?" I said, "Well, I'm Lutheran." She said, "You're Christian." "Okay, which part? So there is sonatorial sound similar to our lesson prior to the lesson in gospel. It's such that you read the response and then go into the gospel version. So I walked up and the priest was sitting there when he saw me. I read the words that they responded to, and I'd forgotten how to do this thing. They responded rather than have to read it on all my board. Such is the word of the Lord, or something like that. Read it through, and they were so happy to have a Lutheran, a Christian, another Christian, come along for this thing in the service that we have invited them over to ours. It's real good to.
Certainly a wonderful change from the past, isn't it?
It is.
Has the Pope approved that?
Approved what? Reading?
Catholic.
No. Mm-hmm. No. That's not changed. That's the law, the canon law is very clear about that. And that's why, you may have missed the story at the beginning when I talked about the priest. I mean, for a priest to commune in a Lutheran church or another church is really an act of confession on that person's part, because that they are putting themselves in a very, well, they're violating church law.
Yeah. kind of hold the line, but pull back the line. And so, where it be more of a PR, traveling on the line, making good things to people, but when it comes to the new gritty, then he's more rigid and more sort of wise in terms of things that happen since that. So I don't know that to be true, but I'm particular that I could say that, but certainly informed people. So that the expectation of the magisterium saying that in the church were not immediate.
I think for both Roman Catholics and for Lutherans, I mean, the U.S. Church is in a different place than much of the rest of Christendom, which I guess is okay because we're crazy Americans, right? Yes.
I have to tell a story about the experience, because in my town, when I moved here in the 60s, it was Wednesday night at church night, and we had no community, and we didn't have nothing on Wednesday night, because all the churches had worshipers. Well, the years have gone by, that is not the case anymore. But the experience in our town continues to have a service on Wednesday night. We have, by the way, I came once in a while and then after come. But it's non-denominational. I go to the Lutherans over there. And the rich heritage, or the strong doctrine perhaps, that the Lutheran Church gives to its people is very predominant there. They want the 19th century, beautiful, and it is all the non-voluntary.
Good example. Neat things are happening. Pray that the Spirit keep pushing and shoving at us all to get us to be closer together. That's what we're hoping for. As Elmer said before, I mean, I agree completely that it's the people of God, it's the people of the church, the laity, if you want to use that term. It's that voice that is most important. And sometimes the theologians are either ahead or with you. I think most often the church bureaucracy is way behind, and it's a matter of the church bureaucracy catching up to where the people are.
When you say Reformed Church, do you mean Disciples of Christ?
The Reformed Church in America. That's the name.
Okay. They used to call Disciples of Christ? Or they're different? Are they the Congregationalists?
No, that's a merger. Yeah, this is
more of the Dutch.
Yeah, the Dutch.
That's reformed. Now there's a number of denominations.
This is the Reformed Church in America. Right. That's the just like we have problems. People have problems with us Lutherans. Yeah. Lutherans, we have the same problem there. Mm-hmm. But it's the Presbyterian Church USA and the Reformed Church in America. Those two specific denominations.
Because there is a Christian Reform and a protesting Christian Reform, if you can read that. It's quite prominent in the Midwest.
When you look at the list of the nations, the little Lutheran church, you know, the purified and absolutely the only one that's been church.
So there's not any on that list on the third column, the Congregationalists or the Disciples of Christ?
No.
I thought they might be.
No. And my suggestion for the loop for this our new church was the true visible church on earth, but it was turned down. I don't know. I can't understand. not theological. That's not because they weren't invited. They were invited in this whole process.
Okay.
Well, I said, not really. You can carry it out with you.
All right. Thank you.